Hello. I didn't see you there. How are you all, friends? Woo! We having fun at Tech Ed? At night, y'all? It's always going to be Tech Ed in my heart. I'm sorry. Ignite's a better name. So, was the keynote pretty cool? We have a good time? That extra 15 minutes make it worth it? Come on in, everybody. I know that you're IT people, so you can probably defragment, look for free blocks. I also want to point out to people who are coming in, there are seats that are marked reserved. They don't mean anything. They're just there to discourage the people who are not bold enough to say, I too am reserved. So if you want to just sit in the reserved seat, just throw the paper to the ground and just say, I don't think so, and feel free. So you can feel free to sit anywhere that makes you happy and comfortable. Don't shove anyone who's already in a reserved seat, but definitely do your thing. I saved them for you because you came late. I love it. They just sit down with no shame at all. Please have a seat reserved for you, late people. All right, cool. Let's see how many demos can fail in one talk, shall we? So we're going to do an overview of the platform. We want to see what kinds of cool and amazing stuff that we, the Microsoft developers, can build. So this talk is 99% demos, 94% of which will fail. But if we lower our expectations now, if none of them fail, it'll be like a high wire act and you'll be very impressed at the end. So, who matters? Who is more important than ever before? The developer. That's because you all are developers and I love you, and because the IT people didn't come on time. They're not here. So we care about you, the developer, unless there's IT people in the room, and I then also care about you, the IT people. Developers, though, and IT people, we're kind of the same thing, aren't we? Why did we separate it? Why did it become a separation? Ultimately, we're getting good work done for the enterprise, getting good work for the business. So I think that now everyone is DevOps, everyone is a developer, everyone is IT, and we can all get cool stuff done together. It's clear also that in 2016, everybody in the enterprise is going multi-platform, right? There is a realization that it's not just, oops, I did not click that button. It is not just about Windows, right? On average, employees are using 3 different devices daily. So that means I am seriously not clicking that button, sir. I'm gonna put this down so when that thing moves again, you know it wasn't me. I'm actually gonna step away and, that is not creepy at all. I'm just gonna keep, does it auto thing? I'm looking at my slide person. Did you make this thing auto? What's it? You did, didn't you? She making it auto. Hey, how you doing? How cool is that? She brought me water. You are so nice. Thank you very much. That's going to dilute all that Diet Coke I shouldn't have been drinking. Yeah, auto transition on every slide. Nice job. That's good. She's like, surely he can't spend 40 minutes on that slide. I will just auto whatever on that. I'm about to spend some serious time on this slide on principle. That's all good. Thank you. All right, forget it. I don't even know what that slide's about. So in the past, we had monolithic line of business software. That's the client experience. We do everything on premises, and when we're off, we feel sad because VPN is hard, right? We don't want to do that. Everybody hates VPN. And then the systems of record are all those back-end systems that sit in the big rooms in the back. But now we're moving towards an environment where it's multi-device, but we want to have one code base. You don't want to have to write those front ends 6 different times, right? And then you want your data to roam but still be secure. You want push notifications, but you want access to data in a secure way. We also have bring your own device, right? I'm bringing my own iPhone to Microsoft, but I can still access Microsoft internal data in a safe and secure way. So the user experience is evolving. And we're moving everything towards the cloud, right? We're getting hybrid infrastructure where systems have a little bit of pieces in the cloud and a little bit on premises, and they work together. that cloud journey is happening. I don't even know what this slide is, but it has a lot of boxes and colors on it. So I'm just going to go like this, and then if you take a photograph, this is the one to take. I have no idea what this slide means. Okay, we'll skip past that. What I do know is that what's going on with .NET right now is really cool. It has never been a better time to be a developer than now, because not only do we have a great .NET framework that is a mature .NET framework that we've used for many, many years, but it is now moving towards a cross-platform framework with .NET Core, towards a platform that runs on iOS and Android with Xamarin that's now part of the family. Those end-to-end solutions really are happening now with .NET. And if, in case you didn't notice, a little something special happened there called Visual Studio Code. A couple people went and downloaded it, like all the people. If you haven't downloaded Visual Studio Code, if you're already a Visual Studio user, you should check it out. You can actually find yourself hopping between Visual Studio Code and Visual Studio Full or Visual Studio Professional or Community. It's pretty cool. So there's good stuff happening with Visual Studio Code, and I'll show you some demos. So that's all the slides. That was pretty good. That was like 5 minutes, and I got free water as well. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. All right. Let's switch over to my main PC, and then let's delete those slides forever. All right, cool. So what I'm going to talk to you about is modernization, okay? And modernization is a better word than porting. I think a lot of times we hear people saying, you know, we got to port the stuff over to Visual Studio Core or .NET Core. I got to port all this stuff. And porting is sad and depressing. Porting is we got to do an 18-month project, and in 18 months we'll be right back where we were now, except we'll be forward in time, and that'll be better, right? Porting is a chore, but modernizing is really interesting. What if your existing application's code still runs, but then you can light it up and do cool stuff? What if you can do things like run .NET, ASP.NET 4.5 or 4.6 full framework in Docker? That would be cool. Then you can do containers, but you can keep running your existing applications. Be sure to check out Scott Hunter, as his talk later this afternoon is going to cover that very issue. He's going to show you how to run today's full framework, non-.NET Core, ASP.NET applications inside of Docker. That is really a cool and powerful thing. So that's not porting. That's modernizing. I'm going to try to show you modernizing on the web, modernizing in the cloud, doing modernizing of things in Office, and having things use Office Graph and orchestrated complicated business processes in Office. And then I'm going to show you something really cool, hopefully with a little bit of a surprise if we pull it off, with modernizing some WPF apps and some non-WPF apps, some older Win32 applications that we could potentially light up some cool stuff on Windows 10. So let's start with ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core. I'm in Visual Studio 2015 here. And in 2015, I'm just going to go and new project. And it's important to remember that even though 2015 is a big number, you can click there and you can actually do development today on .NET Framework 2. My blog runs on .NET 2, and I'm totally fine with that because it works great. It's worked great for years, and there's no reason for me to update it. If I can run that in Docker, that'll be cool as well. But it's a reminder that you can support and develop on all of these different frameworks in Visual Studio 2015. I'm going to click here on web and say ASP.NET Core application. ASP.NET Core includes Web API and MVC as an integrated thing. So if you've ever done Model View Controller, the controllers in ASP.NET Core are unified. So whether you return HTML with Razor, or you return JSON and JavaScript, it's the same controller and it's nice and clean. But one of the things that we don't talk about too much, or we don't see enough people really understand, is if I switch over here to this Mac. So here I am on a Mac, and let's do some hotkeys here, and I'm going to go and make a folder and go into Ignite and type .NET. And there's .NET Core. So if I type .NET new, I have a little C# program here. And if I say .NET restore, and go and bring those packages down, and then say .NET run, there's .NET core hello world. But hello world's kind of lame. That's a totally played out kind of thing. People do too much hello world, I think. Most enterprises don't run on hello world. I'm going to say .NET new dash T web, and I'm going to go and make a full MVC application, and then I'm going to say .NET restore on that ASP.NET core application using the MVC pattern. And then when I run that, I'm going to use Kestrel like the bird. Kestrel is our cross-platform web server that you can then put on Nginx or run at a Linux host or whatever. And I'll say .NET run. And now that is running on localhost 5000. So then I will go and run a browser, which I will then go to localhost 5000. And there is, I'll make it big so it's even more impressive, there is ASP.NET Core running on a Mac, which is cool. We've seen kind of stuff like that before. But let's go even farther. What if we get out of here, and what if we type code dot, and then run Visual Studio Code, and come in here and look at our home controller. And you see that Visual Studio Code actually notices at the top there that, wait a second, you're in a C# application. I might need to do something. So I'm going to hit yes. And on the left side there, under Explorer, VS Code is going to appear. And suddenly things start lighting up. And when I type this dot, I get real IntelliSense. I have real IntelliSense. I have real debugging. So now I'm really sharing code between a Mac and Windows. It's not a toy. It is serious. This is why myself and a bunch of people came to Microsoft 8-9 years ago, was to push this rock uphill. And it just now feels like it's going down the other side, well, probably to crush all the villagers, but still, the analogy mostly works, except for the villagers getting crushed part. You've got IntelliSense running inside of Visual Studio Code here. I can also do cross-platform debugging. Let's talk about what that might look like. If I switch back over to this Windows machine, I'm on Windows here, and I'm going to switch over to ASP.NET Core. This is a little ASP.NET Core application. It looks a little cluttered because I'm at a lower resolution here, but of course, if I go Shift, Alt, Enter, it gets bigger. So don't worry too much about those toolbars. It looks a little bit claustrophobic. So I'm running Core, and I've got my little health application. Kind of the theme of this, the talk and the demos that I'm using is like healthcare and a health clinic. So the applications that we'll see will mostly be in that vein. We're going to add a bunch of really cool stuff to the next version of Visual Studio, and I will be showing you a couple of those things as I move through the process. But one of them I saw was just a little bit too cool not to share right off the bat. Do you remember Browser Link? Right? Browser Link was the idea that you could open up multiple web browsers and then have like Chrome and Firefox and Edge and IE or whatever, and then say refresh, and it would go and refresh all of those browsers. Maybe you saw that a couple years ago. Browser Link is a communication mechanism built into Visual Studio that allows you to manipulate how the browsers think and work, and it makes debugging a really nice thing. Later in the talk, I'm going to show you some really cool productivity bits, but the theme of the productivity in Visual Studio is to remove those little tiny paper cuts, those little annoyances that bump into you when you're inside of Visual Studio. Here's one that we added a little while back that makes me happy. If I go down here to Browse With, did you know that you can actually select multiple browsers and mark them as the default? So I've actually marked Chrome and Edge as the default. So here, let's go and run that. So I'm going to have Edge here and one of the Chromes. Oh, Chrome, did you crash? You didn't really mean that, did you? All right, forget you. I'll bring you up over here, Krom. All right. So it says you can press Control-Alt-Enter in the browsers. So I'm going to be here in both browsers. I've got Chrome on the one side, and I've got Edge on the other. And I'm going to scroll down. I'm scrolling in Edge. Okay, so I'm doing my work in Edge over here. So now I'm going to zoom in a little bit to make this better. I'm going to start typing in Edge on the right-hand side. So one person thought that was amazing. And that's okay. That's okay. My job is to get the other 2,400 of you all to be more like this man. To just spontaneously lose control of yourself in the middle of a demo and just... Yes, it's so beautiful. Thank you, Scott and the Microsoft team. That's cool, by the way. I'm sorry if it didn't blow your mind, but if you open up a whole bunch of them and put them on multiple browsers and you're filling out forms, it does make your life a lot easier. That is just one of the pieces of browser link that you're going to see get improved in the future, and it's all going to make things very, very lovely. Now, if I go back over to debug here, let's talk about containers. Containers are a thing that is being discussed right now in the enterprise, but a lot of people don't really understand it. And what containers are doing is making deployment a lot easier. Containers are just a description of what is required for the DevOps people to go and run something. You have a Docker file, for example, that says, I'm based on ASP.NET, do these things, open these ports, and here's my application. It's a definition of my application and how it should behave. But historically, on Windows and even on Linux and Mac, it's a little bit confusing. Docker is command line and difficult to understand. But now the Docker for Windows folks have a Docker for Windows. And it runs with Hyper-V instead of VirtualBox. And you just install it on Windows and it sets everything up for you exactly. So I just installed Docker for Windows actually yesterday in the hotel. Didn't take any time at all. It went and created a little tiny Linux VM that's going to be my Docker host. And I didn't have to do anything, totally automatic. It even installed this cool little application that's called Kitematic. And this is a little app that's kind of like, it's the GitHub for Windows for Docker. You know, it's like the friendly, cool UI that goes on top of this. And then what I did is I installed the Docker tools for Visual Studio. So Visual Studio has Docker tools built in now. So when I click here, I can run under IIS, I can run under Kestrel, or Docker appears as an option. Okay, that's just a little VizX, a little Visual Studio extension that I added. And then I right-click over here and I say add Docker support. And what you end up with is a Docker file. It's including IntelliSense and all the kind of cool, you know, syntax highlighting and whatnot that you need. And you see that this says it's going to use ASP.NET Core. It's going to host on this URL. But it's going to live in this Docker container. Okay? What we've come up with a way to do that I think is really, really cool is the ability to hit start on that Docker. We're going to go and build that locally on my machine. So MS Build is going to run and build that. It's then going to deploy it into Docker, which in this particular case happens to be running on Linux. In the future, we'll also do Windows containers, and you'll see a demo of Windows containers in Scott Hunter's talk. So it's automating Docker, doing the stuff that you would ordinarily have to do, okay? And it's going to go and launch the browser for me, where ASP.NET Core is now running inside the Docker container, okay? So let's get that going. It is going to be on, this is all the debug spew that's going on. There we go. And it's going to launch it. What port is it on here? Oh, it launched it for me. There we go. So that's now on this port, 32768. That is actually a Docker port. I can see here in Kitematic my application and my settings and my ports and control my application from here. But what's cool about this is if I hit like private area, which is where I log in. That is part of account controller. What if I put a breakpoint here? Hit that again. So now I'm on Windows running Visual Studio and I've hit a breakpoint in an ASP.NET Core application where that breakpoint is actually in Linux in the Docker container. And I can prove it, because I like, don't, oh, there, hey, cool, thank you. We can prove it by saying Docker PS, and you can see there that there's the Docker application, and I can say Docker top, and then pass in the name, and then look right there in the second line. You see where it says CLR DBG? That's the CLR debugger. We actually pushed it into the Docker. Some people are nodding their heads. They're starting to see how this stuff works. Not a toy. Not a toy. This is really happening, okay? That means you get to do your apps where you want, how you want, and how, whatever makes you happy. Docker doesn't make you happy? Fine. Host it the regular way. Put Nginx in front of it. Put Apache in front of it. Want to put it in Azure? That's fine, too. The point is we want to enable choice, but we also want people who are users of Visual Studio to have that Visual Studio experience. And that means you have your app, you have Docker running, you right-click, add Docker support, you hit F5, and a breakpoint happens like it should. Does that make sense? Good stuff. So kudos to the Docker folks for making that happen and for the Visual Studio Docker team for making that happen. One of the other things that I wanted to show you from an integration perspective is that not only is Docker fully integrated, but we're getting there with Microsoft Azure being fully integrated. So on the left-hand side there, you'll see that I've got my application running here in Azure. And we've all seen this stuff before where you right-click and you publish, and oh, yeah, it's in Azure, big deal. But what about this? Here's my app, okay? This is my app in production. A lot of people don't realize that Azure and Azure App Service, that's the thing that makes web apps on Azure work, supports this thing called staging slots. Staging slots are websites that are not as complicated to deal with as websites. So here, I'm going to go and say, look at my, oh, that's always sad, nothing to display. Cool, let's all watch me re-log in, shall we? We know what we need right now is we need some music that was playing during the beginning. You know what we need right now is for me to remember my password. Which superhero is my password? Did my password for work literally just expire? No. It was Captain America. Whew. It was either Captain America or Black Panther. I can never keep track of them. Now I gotta do, oh, they're playing the music. There you go. That is so thoughtful. So kind. By the way, if you've ever watched these things on, you know, after the fact or on the stream right now, it's really kind of sad because they can't hear you all. Yeah, so like that hilarious laugh right there, they just heard silence, which makes me look even more awkward. So then you'll have comments on the thing in Channel 9 that's like, I don't think he's as funny as he thinks he is. Somebody should probably tell him. All your laughter there, they don't know what's happening. It's so sad. All right, there we go. Deployment slots. So check this out. There is a deployment slot here called staging. So staging is an individual place that I can go and deploy this. And you can have as many slots as you want. You can have dev, test, staging, whatever makes you happy. And it automatically makes a URL for you. So right here, if I take this URL and I add dash staging to the end of it, then I will go and get that other slot. And I've gone and updated it to say staging there, okay? So that's cool. People don't realize how convenient that is, though, because then you can go and do hot swaps. You can go to staging, you deploy to staging, you get it just right, you warm it up, and then you switch, okay? But what would be even cooler would be if you could go into Azure here's my application here, all right? And then I'm going to go down here to deployment slots, and there's staging, right? Separate application. Again, have as many slots as I want. I can swap them whenever makes me happy. But check this out. There is so much stuff that I have to search now. That's how cool Azure has become. There we go. Testing in production. What could go wrong? Hey, let's do a new feature. Let's call it testing in production. Let's go. All right, check this out, kids. I'm going to go and route 25% of my traffic to staging. You should probably do like 1%. Wow, that is totally not applause worthy, but I appreciate that you did that, though. That's awesome. Thank you for starting that, though. I've actually put some people in the room whose job it is to just start clapping randomly and keep that up. It makes me feel good. No, please, stop. You're embarrassing yourself. All right, so here, I'm going to go and do that at 25%, okay? So then I'm not going to go and hit the slash staging site. Let's grab incognito mode here so we don't save any cookies. And I'm going to go and hit this. So here, I'm hitting production. And here, internet. Come on, internet. You can do it. Those are hitting production. No pressure. I don't want to have to flush my DNS. There's a little bit of a sticky connections kind of a situation. This may be actually a problem. So this is interesting. You know why it's getting a little slow? It's because you jerks on the live stream decided to hit my website. Huh? Should have done 75%, yeah. Or, you know what I'll do is I'll just scale it up because it's Azure, right? But I probably should have thought about that. Why would anyone want to do that to you, Scott? Why would you all do that? That's so mean. They're all hitting my website. Let's see Azure scale now, jerk. Cool. So what I'm going to do is this is the saddest part of being an engineer, and I speak on behalf of old people like myself everywhere. I'm going in here and I'm hitting save, and I'm building a web farm. The second page of my multi-page resume, she's crying with me, because you know what's up. The 90s were learning how to do web farms. We had consultants fly in from other countries to set up the load balancer. And it was like second page of my resume, know how to do web farm. And now the young people, with all due respect to the young people, are like, oh, this web farm is taking like 10 seconds to... Oh my God, you're killing me. It sucks. Yeah, so it does suck. The 90s are over. And there's nothing I can do about it. But rest assured, I did once know how to do this. And it was awesome. Cool. So that's going to go and scale out, and we'll automatically route traffic between those things. And what's nice about that is you can not just go in here and do something simplistic like 25% or 75%, but you can also programmatically do it with PowerShell. So I could start at 1% or 2%, check for errors, and then back off. So you can write this stuff yourself. This was the pinnacle of technology in 1996. And it is now a slider bar and a button, and one person can do it, which is amazing. So all of that built entirely into Azure and built into Visual Studio, which is yummy. The other thing that I can do, and this is another ironic part about doing live demos, is that the next plan was to go and do a performance test. But I can tell that everyone on Twitter is already doing that. So I'm not going to show you that you can actually do live performance testing and load testing of your application directly into in Azure, which would be lame. And I'm not going to show you that it actually keeps the track of how many requests come in. Oh, you jerks. You know, and I'm not going to show you how it maintains all of that data for you in this nice, convenient test run and how it's built into Azure and it comes free with App Service because I don't have to. So, you lovely, lovely people. All right. So, when it comes to modernizing the web, that means moving to Docker, moving to containers, moving cross-platform. You can make it happen. It's really, really cool. Let's talk about modernizing to mobile because mobile is cool also. All right, I'm going to close ASP.NET Core here, and I'm going to switch over to a native mobile apps. Now, because our friends are from Xamarin are now our friends for life, this is my health. They can never leave. I've got my health client application here. I've got iOS. I've got Android. I've got a UWP, Universal Windows Platform, and then I've got an older WPF application, and they're all using portable code. About 90% of the code actually lives in here, in this PCL, this portable class library. Now, PCLs are something that was really common in .NET with the .NET full framework. In the future, you're going to want to think about using .NET standard libraries. PCLs tend to be lowest common denominator. So it's very kind of limited. It is the common library across Android and Windows and iOS. Standard library is going to try to be the greatest common denominator, and it's going to try to have as many things as possible. So hopefully we'll see applications going from being, you know, 80, 90% code use to even more, where just the UI and just the specific device, the device-specific stuff will show up in these other projects. But right here, I've got iOS, which is lovely and awesome, but I've also got this. If you haven't played with this before, check this out. This is the Visual Studio emulator for Android. Hyper-V, I feel like, as a developer, is really taking the stage as it's enabling a lot of these really great things for developers. So Docker, automating Hyper-V. Here, I'm actually firing up an x86 instance of Android. It's going to be running full speed where I can then run my application here. And because I've got a touch screen, it's going to be a real Android machine that I can go and talk to and deal with. So that's firing up, and that lives inside of Hyper-V. There you go. It's booting up right there. Look, there's my finger. See? Hey, look, it's the Hanselman app. Everyone should have this app. It's got my blog. Unable to load blog. So my blog is probably down now too, but that's what happens when you try to do live load testing, right? So this is a great application that James Montemagno made to showcase Xamarin Forms. Xamarin Forms is a way to not only share your code with PCLs, but also share much of your UI. And the UI looks native. You know, it's not like like if you remember Java applets, how it looked like Java everywhere. Android people want Android controls, and iOS people want iOS controls. Xamarin Forms lets you describe the user interface in a way that says, here is a form, here are some buttons, here are some text boxes, but the actual text boxes are native, the buttons are native, the menus are native. So this looks like an Android app because it is an Android app with Android native controls. So it's really, really cool stuff. Then, check this out. Maybe you have not seen this. I'm on Windows. I have an iPhone simulator now. Have you heard about this? Yeah. Check this out. Ooh. Wait, he hasn't done anything yet. How is it happening? What's going on? Will it work? Will it fail right now? We don't know. It's chaos. Dun, dun. Is it going to work and make him look bad? We don't know. Pause for effect. Look at that. How is it working? Well, I could just say it's magic. But that's not how I roll. I would never do that to y'all. My Mac, remember the Mac I was using before? It's just sitting quietly under my desk. It's chilling. Check it out. I'm going to move. You're looking at this here. I'm going to move the thing on the application. Look at the third line there, PID 1399. See my health client? They're remoting the iPhone, just the screen, and they're seamlessly bringing it over to Windows. So now I throw my Mac underneath my desk and I can have a real iPhone simulator on Windows, F5, debugging, all that kind of great experience you have. So I've got a full-speed Android emulator, and I've got an iOS simulator on Windows. So I'm staying on Windows in Visual Studio where it makes me happy. How hot is that? So then it gets even better. Seriously, the stuff that they're doing around mobile right now is ridiculous. So I can go into like Visual Studio team system where I'm checking my code in. I check it in with Git, okay? So I go into team system and I check in some of my code, and right now I'm putting it here and I've got a build definition, okay? This build definition, look at this. It actually goes and has build agents in the cloud. It's gonna restore my NuGet dependencies. It's gonna build the Xamarin solution, including the iPhone and the Android and all that kind of great stuff. And look, watch. It's going to go and run those UI tests in Xamarin Test Cloud. Xamarin Test Cloud is ridiculous. I've never seen it, but I believe that it's an array of robots holding phones. And then when you need them to go into landscape mode, it turns them. That's how I choose to believe that. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's ridiculous. So check this out. You go to testcloud.xamarin.com. This is all integrated too, okay? And I go and find my my patience application. Actually, I'll do Android. So look, I can see the different tests, when they ran, peak memory. I can click on individual tests. Then this is insane. Check this out. I can click on login. It will show me what it looked like on the screen of the actual device at each step. So then, check it. Look at that. So if it doesn't look right, I can go and click on one of those. Like, for example, if I ran it on like a Samsung Galaxy Note, I could actually tell in the cloud exactly what happens. All right, and then just, you know, put a little try-catch around it, which would be awesome. So. Check that out. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah, you like that. It is really, really amazing what you can do in here. And there's even a way to get a movie of the run in each individual device. You can also see a complete device log and memory usage and CPU at each step of the way. So you don't have to have 15 different devices that are sitting around. And with the advent of that iOS simulator, being able to do that in Visual Studio on Windows, that means that I'm gonna sit here on my Windows machine and I have every device in the world available to me, and I'm doing it all with C#, which makes me happy. All right, so that's modernizing in mobile. Let's talk a little bit about modernizing in the office. This one might be a little complicated. Let's see here. I'm pretty sure that I closed a browser I shouldn't have closed because I've got a lot of things going here. So I am going to cheat, and I'm going to grab a URL out of an existing location. And of course, for the people who wrote this, they're going to have to reset all these passwords at some point, because y'all are going to ruin it for everybody, you jerks. But I'm not bitter. Please don't log into this system right now and mess up my demo, because I would be sad for you. Okay, so doctor's offices tend to be a little bit not advanced. I can't tell you how many times I've gone and seen like a Word document on my doctor's desktop, and it's just like, that's where I keep my stuff. But if we can get them to do things a little bit differently, the interactions can become a little bit more advanced. For example, here is some doctor outpatient research that's sitting in SharePoint, and I could go and, you know, click on one of these. Let's do this one here and edit it in Word, okay? And I'll go and make some change to it, like doctors do, make some change to this text file. And I want to then alert my people, my patients, that I've maybe made that change. So I went and just saved that into SharePoint. And I'm going to save that into SharePoint. And then it's going to fire off a trigger. This is the kind of typical if this, then that experience that you have in the office space a lot, right? So then I can go and have an Azure function. Where's my Azure function? Gosh darn it. There it goes. I'm going to have that over here. And that Azure function, bear with me for just a moment, will then fire for that particular individual based on what just happened in the, that's not going to work. Try it again. So basically, a file gets changed on disk, and then it fires off this Azure function. And functions are like this serverless architecture where you can go and have a little chunk of code that's going to run for you and act on that. Except dealing with Office data, in my professional opinion, has been a little bit difficult and kind of a hassle in the past. And now you've got the Office graph, which lets you access all of that data in a very, very easy way. So what I'm going to do, I know I'm breaking all the rules of demos. You guys need to come up here and help me. You are. Ah, touche. Touche. And you don't even have to get up, just like you came late. Let's take a look at our function here. The one that I failed to pin, that function. The one I'm going to go now and search for, which somehow makes the demo less impressive. But it's okay, because I can talk while I click on stuff. And that's fine. And I don't know where that is. But I do know that I have this giant URL, and that comforts me. And I will click on it, and it will take me directly there. And that is good. And if it loads, that'll be even better, because that'll be the third time. I like always saying that we'll fix all of this in post-production. There's no post-production. There's no post-production. Azure Functions is this idea that I have a little bit of code that needs to do some stuff. Think about it. I want to listen for that SharePoint library, and I want to go and send off some emails and do something important like that. Why does that require a file new ASP.NET application and all the configuration and all the crap around that? I just have this much code and I want it to work. And if it becomes popular, I want it to scale. And I want to integrate it with stuff such that if a trigger comes in, whether that trigger is Azure Storage or an HTTP request or whatever, some web hook, I want that information to just happen. I want this thing to run. So here I can go and monitor this function live, and I can see that it did in fact trigger before. So the doctor changed that document. It fires off a trigger that then talks to this Azure function, which then goes and informs the clients that something has happened. So now I can go over to patient, and the patient now has been got their information retrieved from Microsoft Graph, letting them know that stuff has been updated. So I just got an email, and I can go and take action on those emails. But then I could even go over here and log in to the actual clinic and website, click on the doctor, and then I've actually integrated Skype for Business into the web page itself, so the user doesn't have to install Skype for Business. They're just going to go in here and talk to the doctor and I don't know, complain. Right? And then that doctor will go and see that chat in their Skype for Business. So that's a very simple example, but a very powerful example where you can automate flows between people who have Office 365, the public who maybe doesn't, where you can take a little bit of code and automate a business process in a way that doesn't require going and making a whole new ASP.NET application, which in some instances may be overkill. In fact, it would be even cooler if we can go farther. Why don't we do this? Let's go and make a better, more useful Azure function that would not involve doctors, because they're doctors. Let's do something with Pokemon. So we went and made this cool function application. Again, a little function that just does something. I can go and pick the language that makes me happy. I can use JavaScript. I can use batch files or bash or whatever makes me happy. And what this Azure function does is it goes and it calls the Cognitive Services Emotion API. Maybe the doctor could look at the emotion of their patient. That would not be creepy at all. And then send that information off here to recognize something. So what we did is we integrated it with Azure Storage. So if I drop a blob into Azure Storage, drop a file, it will then drop into an output. So the trigger is files show up. Again, a business process, a very common business process experience where maybe a PDF gets uploaded or an image gets uploaded and you need to go and run OCR. In the past, you would have to write a lot of code to do that kind of basic work. But here, I could then open up the Azure Storage Explorer and I could drop my files into this empty container and then they would appear in this empty output container, okay? So I went and got some of the most flattering pictures that I could find of the people that work on our team. Beth did that to herself, to be clear. And I'm gonna go and copy those to input here. Unless I accidentally copied them to output, that would be dumb. There we go. So those just appeared there, all right? So now, let's go and monitor this function. That's going to be triggered simply by the fact that those showed up. And I can even go and click on a live event stream and see those things happen. Those are going to just take a moment, and what's going to happen is I'm going to click under output. See, they're already showing up. Yep, see? Each individual run can be clicked on, and I can go and see what happened. I can see the output. I can see that it found the found anger, contempt, and disgust. That may be a problem. He's kind of the boss, or one of the bosses. So here I'll hit refresh, and let's go and see what it made for Bill. Awesome. It actually realized he was happy, and then generated the Pokemon card for me, put the emoticon in the corner, and it gave him a lot of hit points because he's Bill Gates. I'm not sure what Beth, she made a weird face on purpose. I'm not sure what that's going to end up being. Neutral. You are neutral, neither happy nor sad. Be prepared to show data and prototypes. That actually looks exactly like your face, too. So, nicely done. So that is Azure Functions. And Azure Function is a really great opportunity for people who are trying to modernize things in the office. Because I feel like so much work is implied if someone says, oh, I just need you to do this one thing. And it's like, oh, I got to deploy a web app. I got to use Visual Studio. You can actually do this work here in the browser. And it's going to keep getting better. They're talking about doing IntelliSense. You can use whatever business processes or languages that you have. I know for a fact that I actually have some batch files that are on my desktop. And I've done this for small businesses that they just double-click this twice a day. Or, you know, run this thing in a scheduled task. Move that crap into the cloud and make it nice and simple. It's a great opportunity to move to a serverless architecture that, in fact, sits on top of Azure App Service. So when we say serverless, that means you don't have to think about the server. That's what's powerful about that. So let's switch now and talk about a little bit about the desktop and some of the cool stuff that we can do there. I'm going to switch over to some native applications here. And in fact, look at some of the productivity stuff that we can do with applications that are running inside of Visual Studio. I've got Visual Studio 2015 and I've got Visual Studio 15. No one thought that that would be a problem in naming at all. Apparently, it's like the 15th version, so they call it Dev 15 internally, but the result is it's Visual Studio some number bigger than 2015. Who knows what number comes next? I thought I saw Windows 9 coming. They surprised me. So You can't ever count Microsoft out because 7, 8, 9. All right. I apologize for that joke. That was my 8-year-old who told me to tell that joke. It's okay. We'll forgive him for that. So this is the preview of 2015, the next version of Visual Studio. But check this out. It has an all-new installer. And I showed a little bit about this at Build, but one of the things that's ridiculous about this installer is we don't want people to be afraid of installing Visual Studio anymore. We don't want people to feel like it's a chore. We don't want to make people feel like it's going to take your afternoon. We just want it to be fun and fast and interesting. So the installer for Visual Studio is being entirely rewritten with this incredibly cool new modular UI, and it will allow you to install Visual Studio where the goal is, except for some prerequisites, you could just remove it by deleting the folder. It would be a X-copied Visual Studio. In fact, I installed it in about 15 minutes when I did it at Build. And now I'm going to move my mouse right there and see what's happening. Here we go. Check this out. So it goes and it gets this modular list of products. Right now we're probably talking to the internet. And you can go and say, I only want this and I only want that. And it's not nearly as scary as it used to be. Check this out. So you can go and say, I just wanted UWP, I wanted .NET, and I wanted web development. And it makes it really, really clear about what you can have and what you can't. And we've made it so you have a lot more control. Anything that you want that you don't want, optional stuff, you just don't want it. It doesn't take up that much space. Isn't that nice? So the goal is, once you get your prereqs, like you know the .NET framework for the system or whatever, you'd be able to go and pick, I want this workload and I want that workload and nothing else. And it'll install super fast, 10, 15 minutes, not 2-3 hours, as fast as your disk can spin. So if you have spinning disks, you probably have a problem. You should probably get a solid-state disk. Yeah, if I can hear your hard drive, we can't be friends. So just know that. True story, at my last job, I bought an SSD. I just paid for it with my own money because they wouldn't give it to me. And best thing I ever did. It was like $600 of my own money, but it was 365 days a year where I woke up every day and I thought to myself, it's going to be a good day because I have an SSD and my coworkers don't. Because they suck. So this is Visual Studio next version, and I can go, and I've got all sorts of cool little new features, like we've cleaned up and redone some of the IntelliSense for really complicated scenarios. So for example, if I hit dot, look how insane this is, right? You've been there with giant controls and such, but look down at the bottom here. Now that is keyboard friendly, because you know I'm all about the keyboard. So I can hit dot, hit Alt-P, and then here I've just set up just for properties, right? I don't want to see anything except for properties. And once I do that, I can start typing, and I'll get just what I want and nothing else. So it's not going to go and show me other stuff that might potentially match, which is nice, okay? That's one of those little tiny paper cuts that we talked about. You know how when you're sitting on an interface, and we can how you know how you can go right click, go to definition? You can also right click, go to implementation now, which is pretty sweet for anyone. Yeah, it's a little stuff, right? You don't need to. I appreciate your clapping, but it's golf clap. It's more of a golf clap because it's like, yeah, you should have done that 2014 versions ago. But there's also stuff like this. There's that kind of experience where it's like, you know, I've been doing this for years, and I don't know if this is necessarily the way that I should do it. Can I simplify that? So it noticed that delegate invocation could be simplified. It's previewing the changes, and now I can go and do that. So little nice cleanliness things like that that'll make you happy. Another one that made me happy was this one, and it's kind of cool. You go say something like switch, and you could say something like app.current.shutdown mode. This is an enumeration, right? So shutdown mode's an enum. So if I go and say switch, tab, tab, and then I go and say app.current.shutdown mode. Isn't that crazy? So I keep telling people that, you know, I don't know all the hotkeys, you know what I mean? But if you can just learn four or five and a couple of the snippets, like being able to go and say prop tab tab, you know, and spit out properties like this, you can get pretty fast. And knowing four or five things like control dot, control comma is another really important one. And then being able to do control dot to pop up all of these other things is really, really powerful stuff, and I appreciate it. The other thing that we can do from a modernization perspective is to look at what we can do to an existing application, like an existing app, like WPF app. I've got a health clinic application here that's WPF, and it works just fine, okay? I don't want to necessarily upgrade it to the latest and greatest, because that's a hassle. That's porting. What I want to do is I want to give it some Windows 10 features if it's on Windows 10. I want to put it in the store, maybe, if I can. But I like the code the way it is. So what I wanted to do here was try to do some push notifications, except push notifications are Windows 10 specific things, right? And that's part of the whole UWP world of stuff. So what we're going to do is, I can't get at these without adding a reference. I'm going to add that reference, and I got to get the exact path of what that is down here. So let me grab that path on this machine here, because I always forget that path. Oops. Oh, computers, so fun. And your keyboard doesn't work, and that's fine, so I'll scroll. Oh, and it's already selected, so I'm an idiot. I was like, I'm going to have to dig for that thing, and it's like way down there, and Windows kits, blah, 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 blah. But look, it's already there. Darn you, Visual Studio, for being so helpful. So I went and added that reference down here, that Windows reference, that gives me access to those UWP things from within my application. So now I can go and do push notifications, right, with this application. And because this app already had an installer using like Install Shield in this case, or Wix, or any of those main installers, those installers will now generate these UWP AppX files for you. So you can just check a box and it'll make a Windows 10 installation for you. So I compiled that into a .appx. That AppX is the file that you then put in the Windows Store or your corporate store or whatever. But as a developer, I can test it by just double-clicking on it. And this is the kind of the little simple debugger installer that you get when you double-click on an AppX and you've turned on developer mode. So here, I'm just going to say install. This is a WPF application. Okay, and that's it. So then my app runs. Now, in this case, I don't have a back-end service to go and send these push notifications because I'm still in development mode. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to use Postman, which is a great little app for doing this kind of stuff. And I'm going to go and generate these URLs myself, these chats myself. So what we're going to do is I'm going to call two things. I'm going to go and grab an access token. This would happen on the back end at some point. This access token is going to allow this application to get notifications. So I'm just going to grab this secret thing here. All right. And then I'm going to pass it in the header here. I'm going to go back here because you all noticed that I did that. I know you were thinking it and you wanted me to fail, but I'm not going to fail. Well, I could still fail. Now that I've said it, so I'm probably going to fail. And I'm going to hit send, and I get notifications. So I've got Windows 10 notifications. I'm going to actually close the app entirely, close the notification, and hit send. And then click on it, and now I'm back in that application. So I just took a WPF app, a regular old WPF app, and gave it Windows 10 functionality, and then packaged it up. So how do we do that? We use a thing called the Desktop App Converter. It's really cool. Now, you don't have to use that converter if your install tool will do it for you, but the desktop app converter is really cool. It's funny because you notice that it's marked as a trusted Windows Store app. It actually came out of the store, which is cool that it came out of the store. except this is actually like a weird DOSBox thing. So you install it out of the store, and I was like expecting it was going to be this amazing like wizard of magic, but it's this DOSBox, which is cool because it shows that you can put pretty much anything in the store. In fact, if you take a look at one of the blog posts that I did recently, I took a Visual Basic 6 application, and I ran it through the desktop app converter, and it worked. So think about what that means, though, right? You could take your existing applications, your existing desktop applications, package them up and put them in the store where they're going to be less likely to mess up someone's machine. They're not going to leave any cruft around because they run in that store world, right? The way that people can go and find them and discover them is easier, and they don't have to go next, finish. They just go and say, do it. So your apps do have to have a couple of requirements. They need to install cleanly and need to install silently. So for what I'm doing, I need to make my installers have a /S feature. And the way that the desktop app converters works is really fascinating. You go and run the desktop app converter, and it looks something like this. You run it on your setup, and you give it your publisher name and stuff, and you see I've passed in /S right there to make it silent. And what it does is it fires up a Windows container. It all comes back to containers, doesn't it? It's not using Docker, it's using Windows containers, which is an underlying feature that is in Windows Server and also lit up in Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, okay? It fires up a copy of Windows in this container and then runs the installation and looks at the files that got changed. It watches what happens, so it knows what your app does, and then it builds that appX. So I don't know if you all remember that a while back I was really obsessed with a number of other people at Microsoft in releasing Windows Live Writer as open source. Windows Live Writer came with Windows Live Essentials, and you'd get it when you installed the gallery and all that other kind of stuff, right? This is old stuff. This has been around for years. We were able to get Windows Live Writer released, and we brought it out as Open Live Writer. It took months of hard work by a whole team of people. So then, when we heard about the desktop app converter last week, we thought it would be cool to see if we could put Open Live Writer in the store. Because why not, right? Why not take this application that escaped, that has been modernized and is now being actively worked on by a non-Microsoft, you know, open source community that's older than old, and make it an awesome store app, and then start lighting it up with cool things like notifications and touch and pen and all the cool stuff that you can do in Windows 10. So I'm going to go and run this. And watch what it's going to do. It's going to check the target image. And by the way, if you want to impress me, you make an ASCII progress bar. Like, we're in a world now of virtual reality goggles and stuff, but I am consistently impressed if someone makes a good-looking progress bar out of just X's and O's. I really dig that. So look, looking for folder mapping for isolated environments. So it's firing up this isolated environment in which it's going to do that work. And now it's going to run the installer. See, it's running Open Live Writer Setup, /S, looked at it, then exporting changes made by your installer. Okay? Awesome, ASCII. Thank you, toolbar. Love it. Boom. Looks at the registry, looks at the disk, looks at everything, then goes and pops out your file. So now I can go over here and go and look at my LiveWriter application. Oops. I need an icon. Darn it. I probably should have shipped it with an icon. And hit install. And hit install. Where are you? Open Live Writer. Make sure it runs. There we go. So there's Open Live Writer. And you can actually prove where it came from by looking at the task manager and finding it, and then right-clicking on it and saying open file location. You can see the containers that it's located in, not running in program files or whatever. There we go. And look, it's marked as a Windows application. So now all I need to do is sign it and get a certificate and then stick it up in the Windows Store, which we did yesterday. So let's go over to the store and go to developer.microsoft.com and log in as the .NET Foundation, because the .NET Foundation is a foundation for you to put your open source applications in and then have them manage it, and the things like the certificates and stuff other than us managing it. So we went and we did this. Look, app in the store, update waiting to be released, continue submission, pass certification, cool, progress if you're not Canadian, publish now. Cool. So I just went and took an application that was old, that lived in Windows Live Essentials days, converted it over to a store app and published it, and in some number of hours it will be out there and live in the store for you to download. If you don't like it, uninstall and it won't mess up your machine. Think about what that means for your applications. So now look back over all the other stuff that we were able to do. What back-end services could I plug this into? Mobile notifications. We saw Toast pop up. I could set up Pen and Touch and all that local stuff that you get in Windows 10. I could set up Azure Functions and have serverless backend for this. I could set up authentication and have it authorize against Azure Active Directory or Twitter or Facebook or login or whatever. Now that I'm in this world and I can start thinking about the sum total of stuff that is available to me, I could take this and modify it any way I wanted to. I could take the Office Graph API, have draft blog posts living in my OneDrive, get imported into the thing by talking with Microsoft Graph. Suddenly, things start being really, really interesting. And the best part about this is that I feel like I already know this stuff. That's the part that used to be scary. I know C Sharp, I know .NET. That means that I'm now an Android developer and an iOS developer. I'm a cloud developer. I can write console apps. I can write cross-platform apps. This one environment, .NET, is now a family of stuff that can go and talk to everything from Azure to Office to the Windows Store and beyond. And that makes me really happy. So we're going to see Open LiveWriter in the store soon. So make sure that you check that out. That says waiting to be published. I'm sure someone has to go and push a button. So in the next little bit, go looking for that. And thank you very much for hanging out with me today, and I hope you have a great Ignite. Thank you.